Welcome to the weekly Dharma Talk podcast from the Columbus Karmateksum Choling Buddhist Meditation Center. This week's Dharma Talk is entitled Resilience Made Simple by Lama Tom Broadwater. There are enormous amounts of literature and study on resilience. However, it is possible to distill much of these findings into three basic Buddhist concepts, and so we can observe resilience in three ways. 1. How we view suffering and misfortune. 2. Where we consciously place our attention during distress. 3. What is the motivation for our behavior when we encounter adversity? In this light, resilience is not an innate trait, but a habit that anyone can learn. If you like our Dharma Talk series, please consider donating to Columbus Karmateksum Choling at columbusktc.org. Enjoy the podcast.
Good morning, and welcome to the 11:30 Dharma Talk from Columbus KTC. I'm Tom Broadwater, and I'm an associate resident Lama teacher at the center. I have to report to you today that it's getting close to being complete. It's not quite there yet, but we're very close. They finished painting the shrine room, and it's a beautiful golden yellow. And I think now they're going to be putting in the flooring. So it's getting there, and hopefully in the not too distant future there may be some broadcast and programming from the center, but stay tuned for that. So today we're going to talk about resilience and what resilience means. Before we do that, I'd like to set our ambitions, our goals, our direction by doing a refuge and bodhicitta prayer. In the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha, I take refuge. By the power of generosity and all six perfections, may I attain Buddhahood for the sake of all beings. In the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha, I take refuge. By the power of generosity and all six perfections, may I attain Buddhahood for the sake of all beings. In the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha, I take refuge. By the power of generosity and all six perfections, may I attain Buddhahood for the sake of all beings. So again, we're going to be talking about resilience. I think it's a topic that we could all benefit from right now, given all the difficulties and problems that we're facing today. So what is resilience? Well, basically, it's the ability to become strong. It's the ability to become strong after something bad happens. I mean, that's a simple dictionary definition. It's an ability to recover from or adjust to misfortune or change. This is a Dharma talk. And basically, most of the principles that I'll be talking about today are from the foundational vehicle. There is, of course, the Mahayana vehicle and the Vajrayana vehicle. Basically, in the foundational vehicle, we're talking about personal liberation, things that will lead us to personal liberation. The Mahayana vehicle is the vehicle that not only are we concerned about ourselves, but we're also concerned about others. And in fact, we're dedicating our life, our awakening for the benefit of all beings. The Vajrayana vehicle is a special vehicle that basically uses special techniques, deity practices, and so forth, and taking the result as the path, basically saying to ourselves, well, if I were enlightened, what would it look like? And how would I practice? And that's sort of the idea behind the Vajrayana. But today we're going to stick basically to the foundational vehicle. If it's a Dharma talk, Dharma is basically the truth, right? So it should be confirmed by our experience, and it shouldn't be contradicted by science. So what I have to say today is greatly influenced by what's called positive psychology. And the founder of that was a guy by the name of Martin Singleman over a century ago. He sort of laid out the tenets of that. And so while I'm not making direct reference to that psychology, much of what they have found corresponds to what I'm going to talk about today. So I've chosen two people as my examples of resilience. And that will help us to understand how we are able, how we can be strong, even in the face of difficulties, when bad things happen to us. And the first person I want to talk about is Kempo Karta Rinpoche. Many of you already know his story, and I won't go into great detail about it, but he, if there's anything we could say about him, we could say he was extraordinarily resilient. He came to this country in 1978. Prior to that, some 63 years ago, he left Tibet. He didn't actually leave Tibet. He fled Tibet under rifle fire, actually. He's told the story that as he was fleeing, he was actually fleeing under gunfire, and that bullets were flying by him on either side. And what he said kept him going, what kept him resilient, you might say, was the image of his teacher on his shoulder, the 16th Karmapa. And it's interesting that in his first visit with the 16th Karmapa, the Karmapa responded to his presence, to Rinpoche's presence, by saying, gee, I really heard all those rifle bullets flying by you. That was the kind of relationship he had with his teacher. So he came here in 1978 after spending some time in a Tibetan refugee camp. He also had some lung difficulties. He taught different monasteries. But then the Karmapa sent him to the United States in 1978. He came to New York. He did not know the language. He had no money. I was thinking about this today. It would be almost like if one of us were to be put on Mars or some planet where there are people who don't speak our language, don't understand our culture, and be told you have to build monasteries there, not only there, but in other countries on that planet, and without any established resources to do so. but he did it. That's his remarkable story, that he was able to not only establish a monastery in New York, but he also established centers across the country, in Mexico and in South America. Truly remarkable. I think he was able to accomplish all of that for two reasons: his devotion to his teacher and his unswerving desire to benefit beings. Really amazing. Really amazing. When I was in retreat, he was advanced in age. He was in his late 80s. And he became fairly ill. I remember one time he came into the lunchroom. He had to go downstairs, which was, when he was ill, very, very difficult for him. But he came in, sat down, and we looked at him, and we gasped. His face was very swollen. He looked very bad. And actually, word escaped from the retreat that he was in very bad shape. And the word went out that he was like maybe even terminally ill. Well, he put the kibosh to that very quickly. He had a video made of himself smiling, saying, "I'm okay, I'll be all right." And sure enough, he was back directly for our lunchtime meals. But he had this resilience to bounce back from what would seem to be insurmountable difficulties. Truly an extraordinary example of resilience. So that's my first example, and he is my inspiration to this very day, when I feel like, oh, I'm too tired, I'm too old, or whatever. I look at Rinpoche and say, you know, he continued to teach up until his 95th year and did it well. What an example. Now then, the other example that I'm coming to is more ordinary, and she would say she's very ordinary. But because it's someone I've lived with all my life, my experience is a bit more immediate and more personal, and it's my wife, Connie. Throughout her life, she struggled with lupus. At one time, she had some eye disease, lost sight in one eye, and has difficulty seeing in the other eye. So she's partially sighted. All along her life, she's had struggles. She's also had breast cancer and has recovered from that. A few years ago, she was driving in her car, and all of a sudden, she was sideswiped by a drunk driver. This resulted in multiple fractures from the waist down, basically incapacitating her, resulting in her having to be in rehab for over 4 months. So it was quite a trudge. The other thing I would say, that although she is very ordinary, she's taught me a lot about resilience. It's been very inspiring to be by her side during these times. So what is it that resilient people have in abundance, but we as people that aren't so resilient may lack. It seems to me that there are three qualities or important areas that a resilient person distinguishes themselves in ways that the rest of us don't always do. The first way is how they view suffering. That's really important. How do they view their suffering? The second is where they place their attention in difficult times. Where do they put it? And finally, what is their motivation for their behavior when difficult times come about, when they encounter adversity? The first fact is, if you're alive at some point or another, you're going to face adversity. Just think of the last couple of years. And if not then, over a lifetime, you have had to have faced someplace along the line a major difficulty, a major obstacle, a major adversity. But what we tend to forget in times of adversity, a resilient person recalls and doesn't forget. And that is the first characteristic of a resilient person. A resilient person knows that adversity happens. Crap happens. Suffering is a part of life. They know that suffering is a part of their experience. It's going to be a part of their experience. They also know that adversity doesn't discriminate. It happens to us all. What tends to happen when we come up against some difficulty, some illness, some accident, some problem, what we tend to say is, why me? Why did it happen to me? We sort of close in, get very small, and only think in terms of me. Why me? But that's not how a resilient person thinks. A resilient person is more likely to say, why not me? Trouble happens to all of us. Why should I be exempt? When Connie was struck by the drunk driver, at one point she reminded me or said to me, you know, this mode of operation, this difficulty that we're going to go through is going to be our life. It's going to be the way we have to live for the next couple of months. You know, you and I like to present ourselves as if we are perpetually happy. We put pictures of ourselves and our families on Facebook. We're all in coordinated outfits, smiling at sunset. And we want to present that as the reality of our lives. That's a delusion. That's an illusion we're creating, right? And if we really buy into that, if we really think that is the way we perpetually live, on a beach smiling at sunset, we're going to be very unhappy. Resilient people don't buy into that sort of stuff. That's all an illusion. No one lives a charmed life perpetually. And more importantly, and this is, I think, what resilient people tell us, is we aren't entitled to that kind of happiness throughout our life. We are born into old age, sickness, and death. As the Buddha has said in the First Noble Truth, suffering pervades our lives, and we need to recognize the suffering in our lives. Resilient people know we are subject to adversity. So the second characteristic of a resilient person is that they are selective in what they place their attention on, particularly in difficult times. Our habit often is, when difficult times come, we focus exclusively on our weaknesses and our difficulties. But that's, you know, that's not going to be helpful. We have to, at the same time, be realistic. When my wife was 3 months in rehab, we knew that some things would never be the same. Some of the things we wanted to do, we would never be able to do. But rather than place our exclusive attention on that, what Connie did was single-mindedly place her attention on learning to walk again. So what we have to do, what's crucial to adjusting to and recovering from adversity, is how or what we place our attention on. And in positive psychology, it's called benefit finding. We have to look to the positives within our difficulties. For example, yes, Connie was seriously injured, but she didn't die. Yes, she was had to undergo a number of operations, but she had wonderful doctors. Yes, she was in a rehab center, but she had wonderful caregivers who really cared about her and cared for her. So it's really important to look for the good things in our adversity, not just the weaknesses or the problems in that. Again, our tendency is to notice defects and weaknesses. But if we do that, we lose sight of what we still have. So basically, in our loss, let's not lose sight of what we still have. And that's something, that's a skill that a resilient person has. The finding and the enhancing of the positive in our experience. And by the way, that's not a Pollyanna delusion. We do retain our realism. But we put our attention on the good. That's really important. It's all about remembering what you still have. And I want to tell you, it's not a question of being genetically inclined this way. It's not come through our genetics. It's a vital, learnable skill. We can train our minds in this respect. We can. It's a skill made infinitely easier if we meditate. What do we do in meditation when a thought comes up? We recognize it and let it go. Well, here we're doing something slightly different using the same skill. We recognize the negativity that may arise as a result of our difficulties. We recognize it. We let it go. And then put a positive substitute for that negative thought. It's a skill we, you and I, can develop. It's not something that miraculously happens. It's something we consciously search for. We search for the good. We search for the helpful. We search for the grateful. There's a slogan in mind training that goes something like this. A joyous state of mind is a constant support. So joy is actually possible in this practice, sort of as a side benefit to the practice. In fact, I can tell you, in all honesty, some of the most joyous moments Connie and I experienced in our lives were during her recovery. I remember the first time she took a step. That was a reason for celebration. I went out and got a order of a spaghetti dinner. And I brought candles from home, and we had a candlelight spaghetti dinner to celebrate her first steps. So even in adversity, we can find joy. If we train our attention to look to find the goal, the good, it's like hunting for the good. As we do this practice of looking for the good, we can gain confidence in that practice. In fact, confidence grows, and we start to have confidence that things are workable. And as we practice, it becomes a habit. It becomes spontaneous. It becomes automatic. It becomes somewhat fluid, looking for the good. It's a process, and it's a habit we have to develop if we want to be resilient. So it can be actually something second nature to you in your recovery. A resilient person places their attention on the good. Now let's go to the third aspect of resilience. In adjusting to difficulties, we tend to do harm to ourselves or strike out at others. You know, it's like, it's bad now, I might as well, and you fill in the blank. I might as well overeat. I might as well have that second drink. I might as well just lay in bed. I might as well just not try to exercise, try to do what's good for my health. And that can spiral downward very quickly. So we have to be careful about that. That tendency of ourselves to think very negatively So what's really important for a resilient person is to think clearly, to be mindful of what's going on in their mind and what they are doing, and ask this really important question: is what I am going to do, is what I am thinking really helpful, or is it harming my recovery? So let me repeat that. A resilient person is mindful of what they are thinking and what they are doing. And before they act or continue in a certain thought stream, they ask themselves, is this going to be helpful or is this going to be harmful in my recovery? It's easy, and we can do this. Strike out at others during our adversity, either blaming them or being angry and just, you know, displacing our anger onto others. So we have to be very mindful of our state of mind and what we're doing. When her driver came up for trial in his sentencing phase, they asked Connie if she wanted to go to his sentencing phase. And she wanted to know if I wanted to go. And I thought to myself, this wouldn't be helpful. I'm not going to go. But she did go, and it was helpful to her. She was actually able to face this gentleman and say to him, she wished him well. She actually said, I hope that you get treatment for your alcoholism in prison. He was sentenced to, I think it was 15 years. Not because of this one incident, but because of multiple previous ones. But that was very helpful to her. So she thought ahead of time, if I go, would I be helping or hurting myself and that individual? And she drew the conclusion, and rightfully so, that it would be helpful to her. So again, let's review. A resilient person views suffering as a part of life. That's number one. Number two, they consciously and habitually place their attention on the positive while remaining realistic, searching for the benefit, looking and hunting for the good. And finally, they habitually ask themselves throughout their recovery, is what I'm doing going to be helpful, or what I'm thinking going to be helpful or harmful to my recovery? Very simple. Accessible ways of dealing with adversity. But I can't stop here. The fact is, if we think of recovery as being fully healed and come to some sort of definitive point, that's not the objective. You may still have pain, have difficulties. The point of all of this resiliency is to be able to make the situation, however difficult, workable for you. It's not some ideal perfection. Life's too messy, too full of ups and downs for some sort of trying to attain some sort of perceived ideal. These are fundamental tools to help us make life workable. I'm going to do something here right now. My neighbor has decided they're going to mow their yard, so I'm going to close my window so you don't hear that. So pardon me for just a moment. So there, we overcame an obstacle. These foundational tools help us to make our difficulties workable. But I can also say that we can actually develop even more deeply in the face of obstacles. In Buddhism, it's called transforming of adversity into the path of awakening. So the idea here is not only does the situation become workable for us, it's actually a path to awakening. And we can find these techniques, these principles in The Great Path of Awakening by John Dum Kontrol the Great. It is a book that Lama Kathy taught me to me some years ago. I love that book, and when I am tutoring students, I frequently use this book as a guide for us. Basically, it uses bodhicitta, and in this case, relative bodhicitta, which is giving and sending, learning how to be compassionate and understanding that all people suffer. And I'm giving you a very encapsulated view of relative bodhicitta and Tonglin. But all I want to do today is to point you to the fact that there are other, even more profound practices than the ones that I am teaching on today. And to summarize those, I would use a quote from the 17th Karmapa when he said, if we understand that all of our problems and all of our sufferings can teach us something, then obstacles can become our friends. That's a teaching at a deeper level than the three principles that I taught on today. But I think you can begin to see how this might work. Maybe we'll give a teaching on that at a later date. So again, I want to summarize for you the teaching that I've given today. The first is suffering is pervasive and unavoidable. Don't be surprised when it comes your direction. Attention can be directed, and it can be directed positively, even in adversity. And finally, you gain control, you gain agency by asking yourself, is what I am about to do or what I am thinking going to be helpful or harmful? That puts you back in the driver's seat in adversity. So again, this resilience that I'm talking about is not a genetic trait that we inherit from our parents. It's accessible to you and to everyone, everywhere. They are simple strategies, and you can use them anytime, any place. So to end this talk, the fact is, sometimes life will veer off from the direction you had planned to go. And it can veer off very dramatically and very drastically. If you ever feel there is no way I will come back from this, if you ever feel that, lean into these teachings. Circle back, come back to these three basic principles and lean into them. Now, again, I'm not Pollyanna. I'm not saying it's easy. It's difficult. It's not a straight uphill road to recovery. It's frequently spiraling upward, but we oftentimes, it's not a straight uphill kind of approach. There's going to be pain involved. And these strategies won't remove that pain. But you can go on and practice, and you actually can practice to awakening. That's my promise. Much more importantly, it's Rinpoche's promise. It's the lineage's promise. It's my teacher's promise. It's the Buddha's promise. And finally, because it's the Dharma, it's the truth. So thank you very much for listening to me today. I appreciate you're staying with me. I don't know if there's any questions or not. I don't see any. That being the case, let's simply dedicate the merit of our being here this morning. Again, I appreciate you're taking the time with me. Your time is precious. That you spend it with me, I am very grateful for. So, by the merit of our efforts to listen, to practice, to be available to the Dharma, to working on our recoveries, to enduring and going beyond and using our difficulties as a path to our awakening. May we fully awaken for the benefit of all beings. And by this same merit, may we overcome wrongdoing, the harm we do to ourselves and others in our times of adversity. And by overcoming them, may we attain full awakening. From the stormy waves of birth, old age, sickness, and death, from this ocean of samsara, May you and I free all beings. May we free all beings. May we free all beings. Thank you. Have a great week. And hope to see you back sometime in the near future. Bye-bye now.
Thank you for joining us for this week's Dharma Talk. We hope you enjoyed the podcast. If you did, please subscribe, rate, and review it on iTunes. To learn more about the Columbus Karma Tek Simcholing or to donate to support our Dharma Talk series, please visit our website at columbusktc.org. The opening and closing music for the podcast is Tibetan Flute Song by Tamding Arts at tamdingarts.com. Please join us again next week for another Dharma Talk.